Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today, we talk about the Singapore GP and Kimi Raikkonen's move to Sauber in 2019. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fogel. Hello and welcome to episode 107 of the Fastest Lap podcast. Not the most exciting race, the Singapore GP in 2018, but a very important one in the championship context. What a great weekend for Lewis Hamilton, right, Fogel?
Yeah, it was really just what he needed. You know, he already had a big buffer of 30 points in the championship, and then now to have 40 points over Sebastian Vettel, it's a huge margin. And you know, there's a lot of people calling the season over now, and yeah, I'm a firm believer of it's not over until it's over, but I do believe it's going to take something monumental and perhaps something out of Ferrari's hands to claw back the 40 points, because I mean, Hamilton right now is just in really, really great form. You know, coming from a great race in Italy and then a fantastic qualifying session in Singapore, and yeah, really well executed in the race. You know, he's just driving superbly right now, and I think it's well on his way to his fifth world championship.
And it must be especially hard to swallow for Ferrari, because Singapore in history has been a place where Mercedes struggled a lot, and Ferrari on paper should be really good on that track, but it was completely the other way around. I mean, the perfect weekend for Hamilton already started in quali, and my word, where did he find that lap? In practice, Ferrari and Red Bull seemed to be quicker than Mercedes, and yeah, in qualifying then, suddenly Hamilton, I mean, even in Q1, Hamilton was close to being knocked out in Q1 because they ran on a different tire compared to other teams. And then Q3, I was really, really, really impressed. I mean, 6/10 quicker than Vettel, 7/10 quicker than his teammate. That was amazing.
Yeah, it was really good. But I think, for me, of course it was a fantastic lap, but for me the star qualifying was Verstappen. I mean, Verstappen was 0.3 of a second behind Hamilton, and it was found that that Red Bull had lost half a second down the straights. Now, whether that was completely to do with the engine or if it was drag as well, you know, we'll never quite know. But nevertheless, Verstappen deserves a huge mention, I think, for his qualifying lap. And I think I heard afterwards that he was having some sort of engine issues during the actual lap itself, and if he didn't have those little minor issues, that he would have been, well, Red Bull claimed he would have been on pole, but I guess it's easy to say that. But yeah, nevertheless, a great lap from Hamilton, a lap that he described as one of the best, if not the best, qualifying lap he's ever done. And I think that was his 79th pole position, which is a huge number if you really just stop and think about it. But yeah, I mean, it was all set up perfectly for Hamilton then after qualifying, and he really did execute the race well, going on to take yet another victory. And you gotta say that he was fully deserving of it. He just drove superbly all weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I really just thought about that number when you mentioned it, like nearly 80 pole positions. Then to put that in context, it's basically like four seasons where he qualified on pole every race. I mean, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's huge. And you know, of course, people will throw in the argument that he has the, you know, the fastest car, blah blah blah, but you know, he's not the only guy with the fastest car out there. There's always someone that he has to beat. And yeah, I mean, he's in my book, he's the king of qualifying. That's what the stats say. And some of his qualifying performances, This Singapore performance isn't the first time that we've seen something special like that from Hamilton. We've seen it many, many times, and he really did bliss the field. But I think Vettel said afterwards that he didn't think that Hamilton's lap was unbeatable. He said that he could have, well, you know, I'm not one to argue with that. If Vettel says that he could have got there, maybe he could have, but in the end he didn't produce the goods. It was Hamilton that did it, and converted his strong pace from qualifying into the race and took 25 points.
Yeah, strong qualifying and strong race from Hamilton and Verstappen. I mean, you mentioned it. So great drive from both of them, especially Verstappen with his engine issues. I mean, we've been hearing different stories about the Spec C Renault engines. They are having some drivability issues, but power is a bit better. But surely power wasn't the big issue in Singapore, although we do have a few straights there. But yeah, I mean, both of them had a really, really good race. I mean, when I watched or looked at the race result at the end, I mean, Hamilton was nearly a minute ahead of a Valtteri Bottas, and I mean, it wasn't really a crazy race with some crazy strategies. It was just pure pace. And also Vettel, I mean, I don't know how far back he was, but also nearly half a minute or something. I mean,
yeah, but I think towards the end of the race, Vettel probably just backed off a bit to save the tires. What was quite amazing, actually, just he said about Bottas, Vettel kept a consistent gap to Bottas, I think of like 9 or 10 seconds, and yet he was still dropping away by a couple of seconds to Hamilton. And that kind of just, to me, suggested, like, you know, where was Bottas's pace? I know he was in a bit of a, he was trying to keep ahead of Kimi Raikkonen, but even in qualifying, not even in Singapore, throughout the whole year, Hamilton's really shown Bottas up. And you know, of course, it's not going to be easy to partner Lewis Hamilton, but Hamilton is just on a whole other level. You know, he's driving at a much, much higher standard right now to Valtteri Bottas.
And you can already hear the people wanting to put Ocon in that seat.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe they should have. Maybe they should have promoted one of their junior drivers sooner. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't have parted ways with Wehrlein, which we got that news confirmed over the weekend that Wehrlein and Mercedes mm-hmm. would cut their ties at the end of the year. And, you know, Ocon now looks to be without a seat next year. And then you have Bottas, who, you know, if he was shadowing Hamilton, it wouldn't even be such a big issue. I'm sure Mercedes would be pleased with that. But I think so far this year, if Hamilton can beat Vettel and Bottas can beat Raikkonen, like today, they'll be happy. But I'm sure we can talk further in depth about something like that later on in the episode, because Ferrari, of course, will have a different driver in there next year. But just overall, it was a quite disappointing race from Bottas.
Yeah, and now let's talk about the two major incidents of the Singapore GP. I mean, and in both of those incidents, Sergio Perez was involved. And first, it started already in lap one, turn two, or three, I think it is. Four. Or two? You must be kidding me.
Yeah, left-hander, right-hander, left-hander, and the exit of it.
Yeah,
it is three. My math is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, again, the two teammates, the two Force Indias, Racing Point Force Indias, but let's be honest, nobody calls them Racing Point. To hear the team radio even after that, oh, I didn't see Esteban there. What's your opinion on that, Fogel?
Well, Perez claimed that the Grosjean was alongside him, and I think he was probably just a bit distracted by Grosjean on his left. But at the start of the race, you have to be aware of things like that. I was really, really surprised that the stewards took no further action over it. I thought that they would dish out a penalty, but I guess, you know, they seem to be a lot more relaxed over lap one incidents. But, you know, if there was contact and they had gotten away with the contact, maybe it would have been a different story. But the fact that Ocon was put out of the race, and, you know, he was completely alongside Perez. He was, you know, their front wheels were parallel to each other. So, in my opinion, it was down to Perez, and it was just, a bad error on his part.
Yeah, I agree. I think he wanted to close the door so that Ocon lifts off and gives Perez that position, but I think he didn't realize how close Ocon was already, or how much he was already alongside him, and that meant they touched, and the crash kind of looked a bit strange because the hit wasn't too big, but somehow the accident into the wall looked heavier than you would expect. But I agree with you. I mean, Perez should have steered a little bit more to the left, and then there would have been more room for Ocon on the right side.
Did you actually see the onboards from Perez?
No, I didn't. I wanted to see that, but FOM didn't show that.
Yeah, I think Sky F1 showed after the race. You know, he's turning left, and then he straightens his steering wheel. Now, whether that is whether he was catching a bit of oversteer, or like you said, he was trying to close the door to Ocon, we don't know. But, you know, it's not, he wasn't exactly just drifting out. He wasn't drifting out towards the wall because of the way you enter the corner. He actually straightened his steering wheel. So, after seeing that, I was kind of, I just said it was absolutely Perez's fault, and I'm quite surprised that he got away with that one. But of course, he didn't get away with the incident that happened further on in the race.
Yeah, and you're talking about the incident between Sergio Perez then and Sergei Sorotkin. Sergei Sorotkin caught a little bit of damage, or he caught a part of the crashed Force India, it seemed like. It looked like a wheel rim or something that got stuck into his front wing. Then he had to pitted for these soft tires, so the hardest tires for the event in Singapore. And then he just went very, very long into the race, which meant at some point Perez had to overtake him. And on his fresher tires, Perez tried everything. And, somehow you really could see that he became frustrated. I mean, even a few laps before the incident, he complained over the radio, like, oh, he wants to have a crash or something, where you could clearly see, or at least what we were able to see on television, was perfectly fine racing. So, Perez was already a little bit on the ranting side, and then I don't know which turn, but the mini straight before the tunnel, they were alongside, and Perez turned to the left. They crashed. What's your opinion on that, Fogel?
Yeah, it was just unacceptable driving. Really, you know, I always hate criticizing Formula One drivers for how they drive, because I know it's a skill beyond anything I'll ever understand. But what Perez did was just mind-boggling. It was so clear that he just turned left into Sorokin, and actually, I just want to say for Sorokin, I was really, really happy to see him in the thick of it today. But he's probably the most under the we haven't really heard anything at all from Sorokin the whole season, which is, like, you know, it's sad. He's always stuck at the back of the grid, battling with nobody, and then today, he was probably the most exciting driver to watch out on the track, and it was just really unacceptable, I think, from Perez. But I think Perez was probably just really wound up, not only from being stuck behind Sorokin, but also from the lap one crash with his teammate. But yeah, I mean, it was just so stupid from Perez, and yeah, he got the drive-through penalty, but ended up overtaking the Sorokin again because just how slow that Williams actually is.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a little bit of a different opinion there. I mean, I even heard people talking about a similar situation to Vettel and Hamilton in Baku, where Vettel tried to, or actually hit Hamilton. But in my opinion, that wasn't, I mean, of course we don't know, but from how it looked, I don't have such a strong opinion towards Paris or to that incident compared to some other people, because I do not think it was his intention to hit Sorokin. I think it was just a badly executed, let's call it, defensive move. Because, I mean, you know, sometimes, especially at the start, try to go to the inside of a corner, you know, so that people or the guy on the inside has to break earlier so that they can go around the outside. And I think that's what Perez actually wanted to do. He wanted to squeeze him to the inside so that Sorokin has to break earlier for the left turn under the tunnel. But he just went left too quickly so that Sorokin couldn't even react to that. I mean, that's just how I see it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was intentionally hitting hitting Sorokin. If I thought that he did, I would be calling for a race ban on yeah. Perez. But the fact is, he still messed up by moving to the left and moving too aggressively into Sorokin. And yeah, I do think it was a poorly executed racing maneuver. But the fact is, he still did it. And yeah, I think should have been with a driver of Perez's experience. I think should have handled the situation a lot better.
So I think Perez will not be your driver of the weekend, but you already mentioned you were quite impressed by Verstappen in qualifying. Would you also give him driver of the weekend? Question mark.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously drove really, really well. And, you know, on Friday practice, Red Bull looked, well, after FP2 anyway, they looked to be quite far behind. But yeah, I'm going to, like, his qualifying lap was, of course, amazing, and but you know, in the race, I think I was just so impressed with Hamilton, as well as his amazing qualifying lap. But you know, there was one point in the race where Hamilton was coming up to lap traffic. I think it was
that was exciting.
Yeah, yeah, with Grosjean and a few others, and I think it was Sorokin as well, and the Toro Rossos. But I mean, at that point, Hamilton had a gap of like 4 seconds, I think, to Verstappen behind, and that gap came down to virtually nothing because of the traffic. And then after they both cleared the traffic, Hamilton, within two laps, I think, got the gap up to 3 or 3.5 seconds. So it just demonstrated how much pace Hamilton had and how well he was just controlling the pace and lapping his own pace to keep the gap consistent to Verstappen behind. And that's what really, really impressed me about Hamilton. He could have shot off into the distance and, you know, been so far ahead at the risk of, you know, destroying his tires, but he didn't, and he really, really drove so well in the race, and really deserved the win, especially after his immense qualifying lap. So I'm going to give my driver of the weekend to Lewis Hamilton.
Yep, good choice. I agree with you also. My choice, all in all, is Lewis Hamilton, because, well, as basically I could only repeat what you said, brilliantly executed qualifying and race. I considered Max Verstappen, also great weekend for him, and also maybe not, well, you could also argue in qualifying, Fernando Alonso did a brilliant job, I think, compared to his teammate, again, who showed not such a great performance. He qualified P11, good place for starting the race, by where he got the option to choose a different tire, but also in the race, finishing P7. Very, very good drive. So Alonso, Verstappen, really, really great drives, but the best drive of the weekend for me also. from Lewis Hamilton. And also, again, a good drive by Charles Leclerc by finishing P9. And, of course, last week we had the big news after, sadly, the news broke after we recorded our Italian GP podcast. Yeah, Charles Leclerc will drive for Ferrari. We already discussed that move, and there were rumors all around the paddock that that would happen, and it did. So I think we are all really happy, and we were expecting that. But the thing we absolutely, or at least I, didn't expect, that Kimi Raikkonen, after losing his Ferrari seat, would continue racing in Formula One with a midfield team. I mean, wow, I was so surprised. Were you as well, Fergal?
I was definitely surprised. I think, you know, the Kimi to Sauber was rumored early on in the season. But yeah, the consensus is, well, my consensus was that once he left Ferrari, he would retire from the sport, especially just at his, you know, based on his age. For a Formula One driver, you know, he's quite old. He's the oldest in the grid. It's quite a nice story. I think him returning to Sauber, where he began his career all the way back in 2001. He obviously, it demonstrates just how much he clearly still loved Formula One. The fact that he's still willing to stick around and race for a midfield team. But, you know, Sauber could be much higher up next year than they are this year. At least that's the hope.
That's what I was asking myself. Does Kimi know something we don't? But in the press conference on Thursday, he said, "I don't know any more than you do. I just..." And I mean, the press conference again was like really, really good when people ask him, "Why did you? Why have you joined Sauber?" And his answer, "Why not?"
I'm happy enough to see Kimi stick around. Some people I seen weren't quite happy because Sauber still have to decide who the second driver is going to be, and I think it's either going to be Ericsson or Giovinazzi in that second Sauber seat. But you know, with Sauber is a resurging team, where they are this year compared to the last 2 years, they've really, really improved. And to bring in a driver with Kimi's experience, he'll really, really help them, I think, with the development of the car next year, the development of the car over the winter, possibly. It's going to be a really intriguing operation between Sauber and Kimi once again. And yeah, I'm really happy to see him stick around. And of course, he will, he might grow tired of racing for Sauber, because he's of course on a two-year deal. But if he does see out that two-year deal, he will become the most experienced Formula One driver of all time. He'll surpass Rubens Barrichello's record, so that would be quite cool. And yeah, it's a really, really interesting move. Yeah, I think a lot kind of depends. Raikkonen's enjoyment of Formula One, I think, next year and the year after will depend a lot on where Sauber actually is in the field. But you got to say, with the improvements that they've made from, even from winter testing to where they are now, it's been huge. And if they can keep developing at that pace, then, you know, they could be well up in the midfield next season.
Yeah, I mean, they signed senior personnel from Ferrari this season, including Kimi Raikkonen. And they invest heavily in their infrastructure and also in the development of the car. And I think they will also, similar to Haas, they will buy a lot of parts for the car next year. So yeah, you could be right. I mean, who knows, maybe they will also fight for best of the rest next season. And although I'm still surprised that Kimi took that decision, because, well, I mean, we already talked about that when we talked about Ricciardo's move. It's not really that often that you see a driver moving from a top team to a midfield team. So definitely surprising. And I thought he would retire, because I think he said multiple times that if he leaves Ferrari, he will end his career. And I mean, even more unbelievable was when he said Yeah, he had the first contact with Sauber in Monza. I was like, what? How can you do a contract in like a week or something, or in a few days? Do you believe that?
I mean, there's always prior contact. I mean, there even earlier in the season, for example, there would have been contact between Ricciardo's management and Mercedes, for example. You know, there's always pre-talks going on all the time, in case a move.
Yeah, like the Alonso story, like he had offers from Red Bull every year, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there definitely would have been things going on in the background. And Sauber, I mean, to sign someone of Kimi's caliber is great for them, and I'm sure they were delighted when they heard that Kimi was interested in joining them. But you know, I think Kimi, I think he's sort of resigned now that he's never going to win another world championship. I mean, that's probably been clear to him since Sebastian Vettel joined the team in 2015, or maybe even before that when Alonso was there. But I think he just wants to see his years out in Formula One now in a team where he can race against other drivers and just have fun in the sport before he walks away. And I think that's definitely something that that I respect. And you know, along the way, if you can help Sauber get back up to competitiveness again, it's a real win-win situation, except maybe if you're a certain Ferrari junior.
Yeah, and maybe he will not have too much or as much media attention as he has today racing in top team. It's really unlikely, but who knows? So it could be also better for him to not having... now thinking about it, talking about it, Ferrari isn't really the team that's so open to the media that you would say, he's having a lot of media duties, right?
Yeah, so, but I think the spotlight will forever be on Kimi Räikkönen as long as he's in Formula One, because he's just such a great character to talk to and to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, we all agree. I think it's great to have Kimi two more years in the sport, and yeah, well, not only because of his driving, also because of his personality, and yeah, will be interesting to see him racing with Sauber, and also will be interesting to see how Sauber will perform next year. And I just remembered that we didn't give our race rating for Singapore, so let's do that before we wrap up this episode. So Singapore, I mentioned it in the introduction, not the most exciting race. Do you agree? What's your race rating? And of course, you can track our race ratings and podium predictions on fastestlappodcast.com/stats.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, maybe it's not really worth giving the the race scores because of just how not entertaining it was. I mean, Ferrari after the race put out a press release titled "Boredom, the real winner in Singapore." You know, but yeah, I mean, of course, it wasn't the most intriguing Singapore Grand Prix. I mean, we're used to seeing quite exciting races around Singapore, and I guess we were due a not so entertaining one, but yeah, I mean, there's not really much to be said. I think I'm just going to give it a 4 out of 10.
It's amazing when you just explained your decision, like, oh, not the most entertaining, blah blah blah. I was expecting like a 1 or something, but 4.
Well, I think I'm much more optimistic fan than you.
Well, normally in life I'm pretty optimistic, but for me 5 is like the average, and then I'm trying to put it somewhere below that. Looking at history, I think I gave Monaco a 2 because I thought, well, we had a bit of interesting strategies and they were close at the front because Ricciardo had the engine issue and stuff. And to be honest, I can't give more points to Singapore. In terms of strategy, it wasn't really that interesting. We had the incidents with Paris, of course. So, yeah, for me, I give that race a 2 rating again. Can you remember what you gave in Monaco?
I think it might have been a 3 or 4.
Something. Oh, I just checked. You gave a 4.5.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, yeah, for me it is a 2, not really By the way, I just see you gave Belgium a 4 as well.
Yeah.
So.
Like I said, I'm just a more optimistic fan than you, I think.
Well, ending the episode on a optimistic high. So thank you very much for listening. And we will have more interesting stories coming up. And of course, next week we will preview the Japanese GP in Suzuka. So until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.